After Mitt Romney, the Republican senator from Utah, and Susan Collins, the GOP senator from Maine, both announced they would vote for witnesses to be heard in the Senate impeachment hearings of Donald J. Trump. On Thursday, January 30th, late in the day, Republican Senator Lamar Alexander, who is retiring, by the way, a GOP senator from Tennessee, said that although he believed that the Democrats had proved their case that Donald Trump acted inappropriately in his dealings with the Ukraine, he did not think his actions were impeachable. This, according to the New York Times, and Senator Alexander announced he would vote against considering witnesses, considering new evidence in the impeachment trial. To give us a kind of a roundup of what is happening, first, we're going to hear a couple of clips, one from Adam Schiff, who has led the House managers in the impeachment hearings in the Senate, and one from Al Jazeera that gives us an overview, including what could happen next.
Let me begin with something in the category of you can't make this stuff up. Today, while we've been debating whether a president can be impeached for essentially bogus claims of privilege for attempting to use the courts to cover up misconduct, the Justice Department, in resisting House subpoenas, is in court today and was asked, well, if the Congress can't come to the court to enforce its subpoenas, because as we know, they're in here arguing Congress must go to court to enforce its subpoenas, but they're in the court saying, Congress, thou shalt not do that. So the judge says, if the Congress can't enforce its subpoenas in court, then what remedy is there? And the Justice Department lawyer's response is, impeachment. Impeachment. You can't make this up. I mean, what more evidence do we need of the bad faith of this effort to cover up? I said the other day they're in this court making this argument. They're down the street making the other argument. I didn't think they'd make it on the same day. But that's exactly what's going on.
After the second and final day of cross-examination of House Democrats and White House lawyers in the U.S. Senate, a significant moment in Donald Trump's impeachment trial. Tennessee Republican Lamar Alexander announced ahead of Friday's scheduled four-hour debate that he would not vote for the introduction of more witnesses and documents. His argument is that there's no need for more evidence to show that President Trump withheld aid to pressure the Ukrainian government to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter. He did. But while that was inappropriate, doing so did not rise to the level of a high crime and misdemeanor and the removal of the president from office. Alexander also said in a statement that the whole impeachment process had been, quote, shallow, hurried, and wholly partisan, with the potential to rip the country apart, a major argument of Trump's lawyers.
We're in an election year. There are some in this room that are days away from the Iowa caucuses taking place. So we're discussing the possible impeachment and removal of the President of the United States, not only during election season, in the heart of the election season. And I think that this does a disservice to the American people.
The Democrats then did not convince Alexander that by definition a trial should have witnesses.
It is certainly in their interest and the President's interest that we have a fair trial. A trial without truth, without key evidence, without witnesses and documents, would render the President's acquittal meaningless.
As things stand, that means the Democrats are very unlikely to get the 51 votes they need to call for witnesses. The most they could hope for is a draw of 50 for and 50 against witnesses and documents, unless there's a major surprise. And the expectation is a draw would mean the motion for new evidence will be judged to have failed. Alexander's decision makes it very likely that the president will be acquitted after what's expected to be many hours of debate on Friday. The White House's goal, though, off an acquittal before Donald Trump delivers his State of the Union address next Tuesday, appears to have all but been achieved. Shia Bratansi, Al Jazeera, Washington.
All righty, there you go. Meanwhile, the Senator Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, it remains to be seen as of the time we go on the air. It's unclear. She has not yet declared herself, but we'll announce it if we get any news during this hour. And the spotlight has now fallen on four Democrats from states that Donald Trump won in the last election. That's Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, Doug Jones of Alabama, and Gary Peters of Michigan. Should one or several of them vote to clear Trump, that would give Trump the bipartisan victory that he needs. And of course, all this just in time for the State of the Union address that will be happening. I think it's February 3rd for the State of the Union address. And also, John Bolton, who seems to have a lot to say, and a lot of this seems to be about shutting him up, even though he's a hawk and served in the Trump administration. But he has a new book out that basically backs up the charges that the Democrats are making against Donald Trump. And Trump is trying to block the publication of Bolton's book. But the publisher of the book, Simon & Schuster, they're saying they're standing firm and they intend to publish the book on March the 17th. Also on Wednesday, January 29th, Alan Dershowitz, a member of Trump's legal team, argued that if presidents engage in a quid pro quo arrangements for their own political benefit, it is not impeachable, right? Because all politicians believe their elections are in the public good. A very weird kind of argument. We'll probably our panelists will weigh in on what they think of that. But legal scholars and others have been outraged by that argument. Now, there is the possibility, we don't know, there's a possibility that there could be a tie vote in the Senate in the impeachment trial. And if that is the case, according to the New York Times, the senators, both the Democrats and Republicans, are bracing for that possibility. And that would really put Chief Justice Roberts on the spot, because there's a precedent from 1816 impeachment trial of President Andrew Johnson, where a Chief Justice cast the tie-breaking vote. But Chief Justice Roberts hasn't given any indication that he really wants to, you know, get that involved in the entire thing. So let us now welcome our panelists and weigh in on all of this. We'd like to welcome Laura Carlson, the director of the Americas Program based in Mexico City. She's a regular contributor to Counterpunch, America's Updater, Foreign Policy and Focus, Fortune, and several Spanish language publications. She's also a television host and commentator on NAFTA, the drug war, immigration, and gender issues for various international news outlets. Laura, welcome.
Thank you, Margaret.
And Jackie Goldberg, governing board member for the Los Angeles School Board, District 5. She is a former member of the California State Assembly. Jackie Goldberg had previously served as a member of the Los Angeles City Council, and before being elected to the council, she served on and was later president of the Los Angeles School Board. Jackie Goldberg, welcome.
Thanks for inviting me.
And Dr. Gerald Horn, the Morse Professor of History and African-American Studies at the University of Houston. He's written more than 30 books. His most recently published books include White Supremacy Confronted, U.S. Imperialism and Anti-Communism versus the Liberation of Southern Africa, From Rhodes to Mandela. Dr. Horn, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
By the way, Jackie Goldberg, for our listeners in Southern California, is there yet another election coming up on the school board, for the school board?
Yes, on March.
You cut out, Jackie.
Yes, on March the 3rd.
On March the 3rd. Okay, yes. So
Voting starts on February 22nd.
Right. So for our listeners who want to support you, those dates are important, because that could be a vote for you. Is that right, Jackie?
That's a vote for me. That could be.
Of course, we FCC regulations don't allow us to endorse candidates. So we just want our listeners to know that you are on the ballot, Jackie, and what the dates are. But let us go now to this impeachment hearing. Laura Carlson, it seems like today is D-Day, and it was a day that we all expected. Everybody expected that Trump would be acquitted, but when the day it actually happens, you know, it's a difficult one. Laura Carlson, your thoughts on the implications of all of this?
Well, this clearly was not a fair trial, and the final refusal to allow witnesses in a trial was just proof of that, and that's a sad comment on the U.S. democratic system in general. I think the process itself has been interesting and perhaps useful, at least as a point on which to reflect about where the democracy is and what the powers of the presidency are. I find it astounding that in denying witnesses, the final position of the Republicans, as expressed by Lamar Alexander, was to admit that he did it and to no longer argue the facts and say we don't need witnesses because, yeah, he did it. But it's not an impeachable offense, and there are a lot of legal arguments that were given to demonstrate that, in fact, it is. And then following up with the American people will decide in the elections. So what's really in play here is Congress's concept as an institution beyond the partisan divisions of its own duties in checking the abuse of presidential power for personal gain, and then in the final analysis, the people's concept of democracy. So it ends today, or possibly tomorrow, probably today, and what does that leave us with? The trial was used as a grandstand for the president's achievements, like Eric Hirschman's list yesterday that contained at least two obvious lies, and by the time fact-checkers get a hold of it, we'll probably demonstrate more. And then for the Democrats, I think some important issues were raised about the abuse of power and about with the relationship between the executive and Congress by blocking subpoenas and basically putting out a general order of no compliance with the entire trial on the part of Donald Trump, of course. So Schiff portrayed him as a president who believes he's above the law and that he has the right to declare his own innocence when he wants to without having a full trial, and that expects everyone to accept that. Unfortunately, I think there are quite a few people in the United States, citizens, who really don't care about that. And they'll only come to care about that when it's too late. And that, of course, includes this almost unconditional base that Donald Trump has. But there's a lot who do. And for them, it's come down to a question of how much can you get away with as president without being held responsible? We've seen that the answer is shockingly a lot, more than certainly the founding fathers or the legal framework of the United States would have envisioned or permitted in the intention of the laws. But the system is vague about abuse of power, and times have changed. There was an absolute disdain from Trump about the entire process and partisanship that's just so vicious these days has clouded the critical judgment of a large part of the citizenry. You don't hear the term civic duties anymore, and this comes down to a real problem in the educational system as well. How do you create citizens for a real functioning democracy? The rest of the world knew that this was a foregone conclusion, and yet there's been a lot of interest in many countries, certainly here south of the border, on a day-to-day basis of what's happened throughout that. So I think that it will be seen as a failure of U.S. democracy to not have a full hearing on this issue. The facts themselves of using U.S. aid for personal gain, I think, are shocking and threatening to many, many other countries and a threat to diplomacy as well.
Yeah, and Jackie Goldberg, this seems to be such an Orwellian moment, you know, war is peace, right? Kind of moment, because it just seems, I mean, the Republicans keep saying, well, the House really should have called Bolton and should have called all these other witnesses. And it's obvious that they tried and they were blocked in terms of doing it. And, you know, one just really has to wonder what this means, what this could mean for young people, for example, you're in the field of education, who are grappling with what is this democracy really about? Are, you know, is the message that if you're the president, you basically could get away with anything? Like Trump said, you could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. And then you have somebody who is a professor emeritus from Harvard, Alan Dershowitz, I mean, arguing this weird kind of mixed motive argument that the president could be impeached for otherwise lawful actions if they are motivated by gaining personal political benefits rather than serving the public interest, and that both motivations are simultaneously existing here, and that's why you can't impeach Trump. I mean, it's crazy land.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's going to upset every government teacher in America who teaches separation of powers in order to have a balance of power. That's the whole point of the separation of powers, is to balance power so that no one part of the federal government can overtake all of the rest of it. And, of course, that's just gone out the window. So I think all of the government teachers are saying, well, except when partisan politics is more important. I think probably the most disturbing of this all is that there are really almost no Republicans left in the entire Senate or the Assembly, the House, that believe that they should put the country ahead of their own personal needs. And that's really sad. I mean, that's really sad. Even Collins's vote is only what we used to call a hall pass. You know what a hall pass is? A hall pass is that you're in a difficult re-election campaign and your constituents want you to vote against what your leader wants you to do, and he or she gives you an okay to vote against him publicly because we have enough votes not to need your vote. That's called a hall pass. Well, she got a hall pass. She didn't do anything courageous. She would do something courageous if there were three other people with her. That's courageous. If she's the only one or one of two or three, that's not courage. That's a hall pass.
Yeah.
So what we have basically is nobody left in the Republican Party of elected officials. Maybe Mitt Romney might be one exception, but he isn't doing that because in his state it's popular what he's doing. So there's nobody here willing left in America, in the elected officials of the Republican Party in the United States Congress, that's willing to put the country ahead of their own personal political needs. That's really terrifying. That is really terrifying. Because that really does mean that Trump knows he could actually do any damn thing he wants.
Yeah, and he absolutely
is. Scary. It's scary for any president to have that kind of power. But this particular president, who makes his decisions about all his policies by tweets, and doesn't read any of the things that, and doesn't believe in his own establishment's information in terms of intelligence, that's very scary stuff because it's bad for any president to have that kind of power. That is exactly what the framers of the Constitution were trying to avoid. They didn't like kings. They had had kings. They didn't want kings again. And now, of course, the Republicans had said, well, okay, if it's our king, I guess it's okay for have a king.
Yeah. And, you know, today I really woke up just with an awful feeling in the pit of my stomach, even thinking of our planet and what this means as Trump has rolled back close to 100 protections. Just today, there was an article about rolling back protections for to protect birds, the rivers and the streams. I mean, the earth has given us so much. I mean, and clearly Trump and all of his enablers are putting money and their profit, you know, ahead of the planet itself and ahead of future generations who are going to have to be dealing with all of this mess. But Dr. Gerald Horn, I mean, it seems as though this really is another example of upsetting the story of America, of the United States in particular, upsetting the apple cart, of really exposing what is behind the establishment here that runs around the world promoting the United States as this incredible democracy while we know how it began. And also one of Trump's lawyers argued, was criticizing the 1619 Project in the Senate hearing. That was the New York Times series that was released marking the 400th anniversary of the first arrival of enslaved people in the United States, because that also upset their apple cart in terms of the whole story of the what the revolution was all about. So, Dr. Horn, just put this all in context, because this has wide implications for those of us living in the United States, but also for countries around the world who don't get to vote for the U.S. president, but the U.S. president has a lot to say with what's going to happen to them. Dr. Horn.
Well, there's a certain symmetry between the good news for Mr. Trump and the fact that today Britain will be exiting the European Union formally, a massive vote of self-harm, which will convert Britain into a kind of vassal state of Washington and will also poise Britain to be used as a wedge against other European nations, particularly France, that are not willing to do Washington's bidding. I think historically we can see clearly that these two bits of news are direct product of the Cold War period, that is to say, how Ronald Wilson Reagan in Sacramento and Washington and Margaret Thatcher in London helped to destabilize labor, the labor left on spurious grounds that supposedly the labor left was too close to Moscow. Now we have the spectacle of a U.S. president precisely being charged with being too close to Moscow. Obviously, as your comment about the 1619 Project suggests, we need a new interpretation of the United States of America that can explain what's going on today, as opposed to these liberal fantasies that pass for history, which, of course, have been the stock and trade of those who criticize the 1619 Project. If that project of in reinterpreting the United States begins to take flight, I dare say that its central theme will be class collaboration, because that's one of the few ways we can begin to understand why Mr. Trump's base is not crumbling, why he received solid support across class lines from Euro-Americans speaking generally. I think it's also important to point out that there are a couple of items with regard to the impeachment trial that we should comment on. I mean, first of all, I do think that Congressman Adam Schiff of Southern California did a credible job as the lead impeachment manager, but it begs the question as to why the head of the House Intelligence Committee, Mr. Schiff, was the lead impeachment manager and not Gerald Nadler, the head of Judiciary, who should have been the lead impeachment manager if protocol had been followed. And I think people in California should watch out for some fancy footwork that will seek to put Mr. Schiff into Dianne Feinstein's chair as senator from California, the 86-year-old Dianne Feinstein, or perhaps even challenge Kamala Harris going forward. With regard to John Roberts, obviously we need to watch him with regard to whether or not there's a 50-50 tie on whether or not witnesses should be called, but do not expect a profile and courage from Mr. Roberts, who, after all, has been savaged by the right wing, including Mr. Trump, because he's blamed for a Supreme Court decision that basically rescued Obamacare from the dustbin of history.
Yeah, and Dr. Horn, just one other thing, not directly, but connected to all of this, are the trouble that people in the United States seem to be having to just say no and protest. I mean, the strikes are ongoing in France right now. I mean, you know, we see people rising up all over the place, including in Haiti. The people were not out on the streets during this whole impeachment, process. But we also see some trouble on the horizon, because increasingly we see the growing divide among people. We talk about the racial divide, but we also see those who are whipping up efforts to divide black and brown people, and a kind of a separatist direction, particularly some of the younger black people who perhaps didn't have the experience of the civil rights and the militant black movement, that they are going in. And that is also very dangerous, because given the dangerous time that we are in, we really have to find a way to, from our autonomous base, but nevertheless find the way to come together, because I'm afraid that, you know, all hell could break loose if, especially if Donald Trump wins another term.
Dr. Horn. Clearly, in order to confront the profound points that you raise, we need a different interpretation of how the settler colonial project in North America was launched, and how it continues to perpetuate itself. As long as we're bound by these liberal fantasies about liberty, freedom, and democracy, and this grand revolution that was a great leap forward for humanity, at the same time the Native Americans were being dispossessed and Africans were being enslaved, it seems to me we're always going to be mired in absolute confusion.